Wes, is that you? Is that the real Wes Wyatt, or is that a fake?
It's the real one. I'm still a little hoarse, still big as one, but all is good.
So what's all you call you Clydesdale on the side? Is that what
we're going? You know, when I run, which is usually now when I'm chased, not by choice, but the league that I'm in, as cruel as it sounds, is the Clydesdale. I mean, whoever named that was very, very either sarcastic or had a great sense of humor. But yeah, I'm in the Clydesdale league.
Yeah, well, I'm not a gazelle. That's why I walk, and I walk a lot. But I did start incorporating just a little bit of slow jogging into my routine this week. I mean, not for very far, just add a little bit in between, just. Mainly because I was in a hurry and I needed to get back and I wanted to get the steps in. So I was up my way to cheat a little bit, right? And make sure I got what I needed. But I do understand one thing. I see a lot of people when I'm out walking and everybody's, hi, how you doing? And everybody's happy and smiling. Nobody's happy and smiling when they're jogging or running. And so that's enough reason for me not to do it.
Yeah, it's rare that I'm smiling when I'm running. Maybe if I ever win the lottery and I'm going to, cash the check, yes, then I might have a big grin on my face. But otherwise, if I'm running, you probably need to get in front of me because whatever's behind me is going to get me and not you. I mean,
that's fair enough. Fair enough. So, as we get going here, we talk about this all the time, my brother, but isn't it great? The whole art of, I think we'll call it an art of networking, right? Just the more networking, the more people you meet. And today's guest, it came directly out of that. We have a great friend of the show and a friend of ourselves individually now, Ian Selby, and just become a great friend over time. And he introduced our guest today, Ian May, who have been friends much longer together, the two Ians, than what we've known either of them, obviously. But my only point is, I never get tired of or feel like we can talk enough and expose enough to people to, man, just make connections, right, and meet people.
Well, they call it social media for a reason, Randy. If you don't have an intention to connect and engage, then this whole thing is kind of for naught. I mean, otherwise it's a bunch of imaginary friends. You could just sit in a room and, talk to them without the internet.
Exactly.
But it's something that I think that we've been so blessed to taproot down into some of these people's, they always talk about borrowing other people's audience. Mm-hmm. I gotta tell you, borrowing other people's contacts, and being able to meet these friends that they hold in high regard, and being able to kind of glean what it is that makes them the brand ambassador or the quote unquote expert in their field, whether it's from the industry of building that we got started with or the thing that has kind of evolved after time of just finding people that build wins, not just actual buildings. It's been incredible.
It has been. It has been. And it just shows you the, like you said, it's the force multiplier effect of social media, right? And as when Ian Selby reached out to us and introduced Ian May, who's coming on here very quickly, as I said, and I met any friend of Ian May or of Ian Selby has got to be a friend of ours, right? Because that's the beauty of those great relationships is if you're going to if Ian is one of those people, and either Ian now, right, introduces us to somebody, we got to meet him. It just has to.
Yeah, absolutely has to. It's a must meet. So, speaking of which, how about we do it?
Well, we should, because you're in the middle of a tornado or something. So we better get this in before the basement goes dark. Literally.
Well, I just looked out the window and saw the Wicked Witch go by. I mean, so
that's no way to talk about your wife. I'll stop that.
I'm not going to tell her you said that.
Yeah, I did not. We usually don't edit these, but you might want to edit that part.
Yeah.
I couldn't help myself. All right, let's go get Ian. I mean, nobody wants to hear this.
All right.
Welcome to Building Wins Live with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director Wes Wyatt. Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins. Now, let's get to the show.
Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Good, thank you. Really well.
Well, good. It's great to have you on. I appreciate it. Wes and I was saying, blessed to meet a friend of Ian Selby, and now we got the two Ians.
Well, it's either a blessing or a curse. I'm not sure.
We'll give it another week or two. We'll figure that one out.
That's right, for sure.
Well, anyways, welcome and thank you for being on. I enjoyed our conversation yesterday before we decided to record today, and just really, really blessed to meet you and looking forward to your story. So, first, before we get started, instead of where in the world is Waldo? Let's do who in the world is Ian May.
Okay, really quickly, a transplanted Australian who spent close to 30 years in Canada and then the last 7 years in the U.S., both in New York and Seattle. So I think since I've been in North America, I've actually lived in and sold 16 homes. And so, traveled around a bit, worked in a lot of different companies, primarily – doesn't matter what you call it, business transformation, business optimization. It's an old-fashioned turnaround. And usually, started off doing that for a large corporation, really enjoyed it. So I was put in all the ugly spots and really enjoyed, learned a lot, started off in finance. I guess they found I had a sense of humor and threw me out of the profession. So then, a militant plant as a plant manager, then sales manager, district manager, general manager in the commodity side, and then thrown into a troublesome specialty packaging group, moving from Vancouver to BC to Toronto. So I've been backwards and forwards on that lifestyle for quite some time. And then more recently, obviously down in Seattle and then in New York. So doing the same thing, both for corporations or private equity, just optimizing the business and building as quickly as they can the value. And I always talk about this. There's two parts to the valuation. There's the multiple and there's the EBITDA. And a lot of people, if you get caught up on what's the multiple, well, the multiple is driven by what the sales volume is. So if you go from 50 million to 100 million, your multiple automatically increases. But, the real big impact of that is the EBITDA. So if you grow and you can really throw those contribution margin dollars to the bottom line, the value skyrockets, and that's what you're supposed to do. And so I've done that for, well near close to 30 years, I guess, off and on. But the last almost two decades, primarily thrown into that, bouncing from one to the other. And in that business, you always have a shelf life. So that's just the nature of the beast. But different industries and, love doing what it is. Whatever the problem is, you work in, whether it's a revenue issue or an operations issue or a costing issue or whatever, I've got the tools in the toolkit to be able to do them. And then invariably, there's always two or three that you've got to work on as quickly as possible. So if you haven't got the traction in the first 100 days and know what you got to do and make the changes and move forward, then and get the right people to help you, whether it be on a permanent basis or a consulting basis, then you go do it. I've been known, I never have a long tail, so I never put someone in on a permanent basis and then move them to the next one. I gotta leave it as a freestanding operation when I leave.
Interesting. So you and with your background, you're in a unique position because, as you just said, many businesses that you get into that are in trouble, it's probably, I'm guessing, not just one area. It could be, but I'm guessing it probably covers two or three different parts of the business, right? So having that background that you have puts you in a unique position, because if you're a finance pro, mm-hmm. and that's the only background you have, and it's not necessarily finance related as much as it is operations related or sales related or costing related. It's probably wrong person at the wrong place, but you bring a bucket full of background that you can bring to these companies. And that's pretty unique, I would think, in what you do.
Yeah. You're 100% correct, because when you go in there and someone says it's a lead time issue in production, and you get started on that and you start to look at it and you brush the surface dust off, invariably you're going to drive down into costing. You're going to work into reporting. You're going to work into waste. You're going to work into, what's your continuous improvement plan? Well, we don't have one. Okay. Well, there's a lost opportunity. And then it's, if we get more lead time, we can get more customers. And so, then that spills into revenue. So, I don't think there's one I haven't gone into that you've gone into. And the first thing you find is that as you drill down in the different verticals, that the costing model hasn't been updated, and it's not updated in a timely fashion. So how do you know how much money you're making on it? So what's the product mix? So which one drives the most? How are you going to run? Because a lot of times it makes sense to run longer runs on the weekend, because even though it's time and a half, the overhead's absorbed. So how do you get more through? So it's all those things come into place, making the decisions, and you try to instill that kind of thought process in the organization. So people learn a lot that way. But I will say, without exception, a company that's in trouble and they say, oh, it's a turnaround, we need to address the cost. Immediately, the same time that I start to focus on the cost, I'm focusing on the revenue. Because, the fastest way out of the pit is to get the revenue ramped up. Because a lot of people will say revenue hires a multiple of sins for a short term, and you need to get that done. So you need to have your eye on the prizes, what you need to do there, and then how quickly you can get there, how good your people are. And then on the operational side, you drive in and drive out the waste. And waste is just not your raw material costs. And you talk to the employees and you say, okay, well, how much is this? Well, if it's 10%, it's this. I said, no, you've created all these extra hours that we've already figured in. So once you start to run it, the only incremental cost is the materials, because the labor, overhead, and all that, it's basically found. So we're going to make more money, and we make more money, then we're going to be able to drive more money back in for improvement. So it's you're thinking three-dimensionally all the time about your business, how this impacts and that, and, getting the team on board, getting the employees on board. Most people say, if the shift starts at 7 o'clock, most plants I go into, it's usually 1.5 shifts. After about 12 months, they're a 3-shift operation. So you got to be there and walking the floor constantly during your day, taking the time out to go and listening and hearing and getting ideas. So that's where the action is, and you can't do it without people, and they got to make sure that you're going to work as hard and longer than they are doing, and so they can trust you and say, okay, we're going to get rewarded. And there's also, you tie in the contribution gains, you tie that into bonus plans and things like that, and people go, their eyes pop open. You mean to say, we're going to get paid for improved performance? Most definitely. So it's it's fun. I've been in so many different verticals, and people say, I've been in the paper and packaging business all my life and stuff like that. Yeah, okay, I get that, but you lose the opportunity to see how certain things in other businesses get transferred. How does supply chain business impact that? How does digital printing impact that? How does, metals, how you fabricate the metals and line things up, how does that impact a continuous operation or a multi-step custom operation? You learn from all those, and then you can do that. So you can be more valuable than someone who's been in the industry for years. I don't mean that negatively, Randy, because I know you've got a long history in it. But guys like me, that's being able to transfer. I once said the last business I was in was doing steel shelving, retail shelving and freezers and stuff. And one day we were sitting there, and we've done a lot of work and big uptick in business. and EBITDA. And I said, you know, I think we're at the stage now that we could go out there and say, we're not going to manufacture steel shelving anymore. We're going to make windows. And the management team would just horrify. They said, what are you talking about? I said, look, the principles that we've learned and how we go about that business, if we apply the same principles, yes, we can get the technocrats in to show how to glaze and do that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. But the methodology and the processing and the procedures we put in place would apply to anything. The technical aspect, yeah, we get it. Now, how many technical people do we have? I got half a dozen. Get half a dozen expert in that. Yes, you invest in the technology to make it. But how we run a business, we should be able to make that transitional step. It was a point to show them that, you know, what we learn from other businesses and then how we run our business. Business is a business. Mm-hmm. So focus on those principles and drill down and then pull those nuggets out. So,
you know, I love what you just said a minute ago about outside of your industry, because you're so right. Some of the favorite people that I talk to, whether it's doing shows like this or being on other people's or just out and about networking, is I feel very strongly what you just said, that you need to engage outside of your own industry, because there is an industry speak, right? Yes. An industry mindset. And yep. we may do things slightly different within the industry, but we all kind of do it the same yep. way, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to escape that industry speak and find out what's working with this widget versus our widget, right?
Yeah. Inbreeding has never been a success for humanity. So right. it's not going to be a success in business over the longer term, right? So,
right.
you know, we have that scenario. And then, you know, just tell a brief story. When I got first punted into plant manager of this militant union plant, I had my first plant manager's meeting, and I was the only guy who was not a professional engineer, right? So mm-hmm. 7 months taking the job, we made great strides. I was fortunate enough. I went into continuous improvement training back in the days when Kodak were the industry leader, and I got the religion. I still use it all the time today, although scaled down to Pareto analysis and stats. I turned up, and because I used to be the controller for Western Canada, you know, I was a finance guy. What would I know about manufacturing? Hmm. So I sat at the table, and everybody goes around and all that. And then, you know, where you have the beverage breaks in the evening, I sat at the table by myself eating the nuts, didn't have to share them. And then I got up the next morning and I said, look, there's absolutely nothing here. So I went to the director of engineering at the time and I said, Don, you know, I got stuff going on back at the plant. I said, you know, I don't need to be here. You guys don't want to hear what I have got to say or things that we've done. I said, and this is from Toronto back to Vancouver. I said, I'll see you later, and took off. The next morning, I got a phone call from the president of the division. Said, Ian, what the heck's going on? By the way, I said, look, George, they weren't interested to hear what I had to say. I'm a bean counter to them. So why waste my time and, you know, and waste the company money and then do that? So anyway, next time I got invited back, I definitely got listened to, because we went from the bottom performing plant out of 13 to the top performing plant with the least amount of capital investment. So, but at that time I said, oh, listen, it's just hard work. That's all. Well, how do you do that? So there's never a silver bullet. Right. It's a matter of looking at the processes bit by bit, seeing how it can make an impact, getting buy-in and do that. Wow, yeah, there's got to be a reason. Well, no, we follow this methodology and that's it. And so everyone's looking for the silver bullet. And I just said, there is no silver bullet. Okay, so it's just get in what's common sense, engage the people, and work hard and go from there. And so, you know, that's always so, you know, even today, people say, oh, well, you come in, you're going to do this. I said, every situation is different. But I tell you, in the space of 3 or 4 days, I'll be able to figure out exactly where we're going to start working to get things going. So,
no, oh, that's interesting.
And it's happened.
Yeah, many times. So, you work with, as I think you mentioned, from small, medium to large mm-hmm. Corporations. Is there a generality of what the problems are that coexist, whether it's a $30 million company or a billions and billions and billion dollar corporation? Is there any synergy there at all, or is it totally different?
The business problems are the same. It's the politicization mm-hmm. of those problems and how that goes through the structure of the organization. Every business I've gone into, you know, the first thing people do is that we'll put a person to deal with that and a person. So you've got this, you know, you start to build that pyramid. The pyramid starts to go like that. The first thing I do is I look at those layers that don't add any value, true value. And then, so you usually like to flatten it down to the most I'd ever have would be maybe three people from the employee, you know, between me and the employees, but normally it's just two at most. And that's all a function of how much work you want to do when you're at the top of the pyramid. If you don't mind getting in and doing some heavy lifting and do the hard yards, it's not a problem. The people who don't want to do that like to have all the layers in. And mm-hmm. so then as every time you put a layer in that buffer in, that just creates more problem because it's their perception and their inflection of how they think they've interpreted. And then as you go up, everybody thinks that they know more than the person below mm-hmm. them. And that's not the case. And so when you flatten it, you people have a seat at the table. So, you know, anyone who works for me, invariably there's going to be the people that are doing the work are going to be sitting at the table helping to make the decisions. Does it make common sense? And that's all about continuous improvement, regardless of what it is, whether it's, you know, always like CRM or ERP, I should say, has always been the purview of the CFO. You know, I've put a lot of systems in my early days, so I know exactly the people who you want sitting at the table. So usually CFOs have a bit of a bumpy ride at the early stages because, you know, I actually go through and you know, break down the chart of accounts and see where the business pain is from a financial standpoint to go in. And, you know, I'm the type of guy, you turn up at a meeting and Ian Selby will tell you this, I got a notepad and a calculator and a pen and or a pencil, and that's it. And I can find out more than the spreadsheets. I mean, I've sat in meetings where, oh, here's the budget for, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars and all that kind of stuff. And I'll just say, by the way, you know, that doesn't balance. Well, it does. It's a spreadsheet. I said, who put the information in the spreadsheet, mate?
Right.
It's like, it doesn't balance. I said, I can just run my eye down here and that's a 9 and you've got it as a 1. So you got a problem. Hmm. So, you know, it's attention to detail and stuff like that. And if you bring a lot of energy and enthusiasm, and you don't take yourself seriously, you know, if you're self-deprecating right at the start, you're well on your way to getting support and getting the right people to the table, for sure.
That makes sense. And, you know, back to what you talked about, I've got to guess or believe that one of the major differences, as you said, in the larger corporations with multiple levels, mm-hmm. There's a lot of political posturing, right? A lot of protect your territory, protect the turf. And that's one set of things to take care of. And then on the flip side, the smaller business, and I don't know how small a business you typically work with, but I would think the closer to the owner that you get, there's the, I sometimes have called it the ugly baby syndrome, right? I mean, everybody else understands it's an ugly baby, but it's his baby, so it's the cutest baby in the world, right?
Correct.
And so that's got to be probably some similarities, but those are two drastically different things. Because with that owner that's pretty close to it, you're coming in and saying some of the things that you're doing, and you've built this thing to a $40 million company from zero. Well, you know, good job.
Yep.
But you have me here for a reason, and it's not working. And they I got to believe in a lot of cases, they're going to fight back for a different reason than the folks in middle management in those levels, that it's kind of more self-preservation than it is anything else, right?
Yeah, Randy, you're 100% correct. In fact, most of those ones of different sizes, PE firms, I mean, some people – I've had people come and say, "Oh, you know, why would I take this job of VP of operations? It's a PE company. I hear they're." I said, you know, you don't approach business any differently if it's a corporation or PE. You got a job to do. So I said, you know, I don't see it any different. In fact, in PE firms, it's a little bit easier because they are more callous. So as you make improvement, they go, okay. They bring you in because they probably don't know a lot of the technical nuances of the business and stuff like that. They just, they're pure spreadsheet guys. Mm-hmm. So you don't get it. You don't get that. Oh, you know, it's all woman from it. And invariably it's 5 years and out. And invariably when I get sent in, it's 3.5 years and it's still cratering. So how, you know, I want to wind the fun down, you know, how can you slap lipstick on this pig as quickly as possible but give it some sustainability. There's that. So you're right. And then going back to the big company, you know, I've always positioned myself way in the early days as a corporate maverick. So I will be doing things differently. So don't be surprised if I'm taking layers out. And it's not just to reduce cost. It's to make things happen much faster because everyone justifies their position by how long they can hang on. And invariably, it's, can I hang on till Ian's gone? I mean, what have I got to do to say things that it'll be okay, and then as opposed to, oh my God, you know, it's going to come in. And it's not just to slash and hack; it's to give the business functionality. And if you got four people doing different levels on the finance side, you've hired the wrong guy. It's right. As simple as that. And you know, I've had CFOs come to me and say, you know, listen, we're doing the gap analysis. Ian, can you check it? Because, you know, your background in finance will spot the stuff. And I'm talking to CFOs who've been CFOs for 15, 20 years, and I'm doing the gap analysis, you know, for the first couple of months and showing the stuff. And I sit there and I think to myself, you know, how did that happen? Right.
Right.
So, for me, when things get into a bit of a, that's why I love doing the transitional stuff. Cause when things get into, maintenance, mode, I'm not the guy. I've had people come in and say, okay, well, you got the business here and, you know, we'll just, you know, go, you know, GDP growth and all that kind of stuff. So, well, you know, get me out. Well, why? You know, you can go play golf 3 days a week if you want to. First of all, my buddy's broken, so badly broken, I can't play golf. Secondly, yeah. It's a great waste of my time and energy. And that doesn't give me, as you say, I get no juice from that. So I may as well move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And you're doing, you're doing what gives you the juice. And, you know, as Wes and I talk about a lot, you love what you do and do what you love, right? And
that's correct.
Yep. And you're getting the juice from that. So, you know, kind of switching real big gears because I do want to make sure we get this story in because I love the story of you and our mutual friend, Mr. Selby.
Correct.
Because we talk about all the time, but do we really practice doing what's right for the customer, doing what's right, integrity-driven, ethic-driven, being customer-centric. We can use whatever terminology we want to use. But you do a show. Wes just popped it up there.
Yep.
with Ian. So Ian and Ian show. Yep. And I love it. I've watched every one you've had, I think, unless I've missed something traveling.
Yep.
And it's very, very well done, by the way. So I recommend everybody catch you guys when you're on. But tell me the story, because I love that story about the books and how that played out. Because that was a great story and I think a great way to wind this down.
Yeah, so I was hired to go into a family company to basically be the president. All the role was to be the meat in the family sandwich. So the old brother who had the majority share was that piece of the bun. And then the brothers who were in the VP role was there. And so they were sick and tired of gnawing. So they wanted to put someone in the middle so everyone could chew on him and still sit around Sunday at the dinner table. So I took the job. I wanted to get back out west. And then I think within the first week and a half, there was a claim came, and we were doing high end annual reports, limited edition artwork. I mean, it was a plant with 150 people with six, seven, eight Heidelberg presses, big large Heidelberg presses. So it was a high end, high quality printer. So and there was this one came up. It says, "Oh, this we got a problem with this book and." And the chairman said, "Ah, oh, you know, it's you know, who cares? It's only 5,000 books. It's in the vernacular, one over one, which is black on each page, and then a color perfect bound book. And so I said, yeah, but the covers are on backwards. They're flipped. So, you look at it upside down and you got the typing's upside down on the back panel and the front panel's upside down on the back. And I go, this is not right. So, it's just a small order. He's just a small guy. Who cares? I said, we always care about quality. And I said, for me, I don't care if it's 100,000 unit run or a 20 unit run. We're going to do the right thing by the customer all the time, because that's how you get repeat business. And that's how, the word gets out about you truly are quality. And we all profess here that it's quality. So, I called the customer in, who was Ian Selby, and we sat down and he said, I said, maybe I can take him a discount. I said, Ian, we're going to replace them. Okay. You know, 5,000 books. It's going to be done properly. Of course, I had a little bit of conflict with the chairman, but I'd only been there 10 days. So who the hell cares? To find something else. I could always work at McDonald's. Anyway, so we redid the books, and then I said, okay, and they're good to go. And he said, well, do you want the other ones back? I said, no, mate. I said, here's an idea. Because at that stage, Ian was doing a lot of seminars and things of that part of the business. I said, why don't you take the books and keep the good books to sell, but use the story about customer relations and what you need to do, and take the bad books. Because if you put it in the pack with them, when they get the book, they'll remember that all the time. They'll still read the book. But right there, there's the tactile example of something that went wrong. Something came good out of it. But tell them that we've given you these so as a reminder. Mm-hmm. So then you can sell the good books at the full market value, and then you're not wasting them on your seminar freebies. Yeah. So he did that, and from there we kept in touch, and then over the 27 years. As I've gone in to a lot of businesses, I've seen the development of his sales methodology and how he does about things. And the minute I've got an issue on sales, which is invariably everywhere, I'll frame it in, we'll sit down, he'll come in, and I'll get him to work with our organization to drive towards what the milestones are. So we put the milestones in place, and then we drive towards that and put it in place. And then we touch base all the time. I mean, when he's in town, wherever I'm in, every night we sit down and go over the analysis and, what he thinks of certain things. And so once I framed it in, I give him complete autonomy because I trust him. Mm-hmm. I know what's going to come out of it. And I know what the results are, and it enables me then to focus on those other areas with a lot more intensity than those. It doesn't mean I, walk away from it and just let it free flow. I mean, he'll tell you that, we'll still have those discussions and make sure on track. Mm-hmm. But I just know that the meat and potatoes is getting taken care of in that area, and the results are always there. We've always had, really strong revenue growth, which is a big part of getting like I said earlier, any business out of the ditch, build that up, and then take care of the other side. So I can cover stuff. And there's other people as well that I use, particularly on the ERP side as well too. In terms of costing and things like that I've used, that have the basic theoretical knowledge to go in and analyze what we need to do. I mean, it would horrify you. I mean, I went in one operation and they were 5 versions behind on the ERP system. Hmm. Wow. And you can imagine the number of keystrokes that were taken out when we spent the first 100,000. The people in customer service and on the floor just loved us.
Sure.
And I couldn't understand why you would not do that. So.
Yeah. Well, and obviously spinning back to the earlier conversation, you found a guy like Ian Selby, mm-hmm. and you found that area that he's very good at, and you mm-hmm. plug him in where he needs to be. And yeah. You can almost like the high tech fighter jets of today, right? You need to be shoot and forget, right? You need to move on. Yeah. And Wes got your back. I want to talk about the show real quick before we get out of here. Yeah. So, yeah. But I love that story about the books, the 10,000 books, because that's taking two things I take out of that, Ian. One, you standing firm for doing what's right, because we always have to do that in business, whether it's painful or not. The pain of not doing it for your ethics, for the message it sends downline in your company, and the outward message that it sends to your customer base, potential customer base. It's hard to even put a number on that, right? Because that's can be astronomical at times. And so you taught, you let everybody know that you guys do what you're going to stand behind it, I guess what I'm saying. And you let the company or the people within the company know, okay, we could have just cheated on this one a little bit, but we didn't do it. We don't cheat on people. We take care of people and we honor our word. So I think that sent a message internally as well as externally. So that was very well done. And I love the idea how you're suggesting to Ian to use that as a marketing tool.
Yep.
Because you're right. Forget the financial part of it, of making his money on the good book. But his talk, as good as it would be, people get home. A month later, they finally get back around to looking at some of the stuff they brought home. They're going to get that book out and see it's upside down. And that story just came boom, just like a sledgehammer right back to the head, right?
Exactly. And so,
otherwise, it's just a book I got at a seminar like I got at 12 other seminars.
Yeah, you know? and it sits on the shelf. Even if you put it in the shelf, the spine's upside down.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Stands out.
Exactly.
Two comments in there. First of all, I've had, VP of sales and sales managers, when Ian does his training and they come in and they say, oh, you know, I can do some of that training. And I look at them right in the eyes. I said, you know how long I've been working with this gentleman? I said, I'm not qualified to carry his briefcase. Okay. So if I'm not willing to take on part of that and I'm a decent communicator, there's no way. I said, no one's going to listen to it, because you have to be top drawer, and he is top drawer on that. And, you know, the second aspect is that, you know, if you don't know near as much as that person, you got to shut up and just listen. And like, I've been through lots of his training and stuff there and support role, you know, from the organization, and you still pick up pieces when you go through. And you know, I could probably, you know, paraphrase part of what he does, but it would never be as good as the war stories. And, you know, and you write what you learn. And one of the things that I always did in every business is invariably you are going to have problems. Okay. Use the book as an example. You know, we used to do these bulk laundry boxes for Lever Brothers in Toronto, and the boxes weren't working, and they're dropping the laundry powder down there, and it was going all out through the plant and everything. Major problem. And so I've been the adage is the salesperson never goes on a complaint call. Never goes on a complaint call. It's going to be one of the senior managers, invariably, you know, probably 80% of the time, myself. It's going to be the plant manager. It's going to be the operators that ran the product. And we're going to go in and sit there and listen to their operators and understand and come up with a solution and say, we will get back to you with a solution. Don't burden the sales rep with the reputation he's built with having to deliver the bad news. The bad news has to be delivered by someone else, because you want to preserve that relationship with purchasing. When you start dealing operators to operators, it's amazing how both parts start to work. You say, you know, if you just adjust your machine a little bit that way, the tolerance on the box would be here. It won't be compressing it. And that's why the bottom falls out. So it becomes like, so, you know, that's always been my adage. You get the right people to the point of attack. And the only time a customer has a chance to say, I have a good partner or a good supplier, is when they're in a crisis.
Right. Exactly.
And so you get the people there that are going to make things happen. And then when you go back, people are talking about, well, I was just down at Lever's and, you know, it was a mess. We had powder, you know, and Ian had to put on this thing and had the thing on. We're all there and we're all in there and there's dust all over the place. But, you know, we got it sorted. And so they become your disciples. And they go through the business and say, yeah, we're really serious. So everyone's looking to make sure that it's top quality on everything we do. No matter what business you're in and what you're doing, that's how you have to resolve it. So it's a bit of a new area for some of the production people saying, okay, you're going to have to go and, you know, deal with the customers. Well, you know, but customers are sales. No, no, mate. You made the product.
Right.
Go take the pain.
Yep. No, you know, I think in so many ways that's right, because you're right. If anybody has to maintain that relationship, it's got to be the sales guy with the buyer, right? That relationship has to stay ironclad, confidence, friendly, relationship driven, right? Yep. And you're right. That's a technical issue anyway. Even in technical sales, that sales guy, in all likelihood, still doesn't know all the technical areas that this operator may know. And the operator is going to be more willing to talk to a brother operator, sister operator, right? And just,
correct,
you know, behind closed doors, you know, this is, you just did this, right?
Yeah.
So great stuff. Great advice. So Ian, you've been incredibly kind with your time.
No worries. Appreciate it.
We always end with a should ask questions before we get out of here. Anything that we missed today that you wish in this 40 minutes of rambling we'd have touched on?
I don't know. I think we covered a lot of territory.
Let's talk about your show then, real quick, before we get out of here. Ian's podcast.
Yeah, it's not a regular podcast in terms of repeatability. It's, you know, over the journey, I've run into, and Ian's run into, people that have been, you know, we talked about Ian on sales. I got some people cultural change, people for recruiting and stuff like that. And so the people that we have on are not like the ones that are going to use AI and that kind of stuff to marry it up. It's really, they want to understand what the requirements are for whatever it is. And we got a guy that's coming up shortly with ERP. So it's people that have made a huge impact on situations, the practical situations. And so we talk about that. And then the first four or five podcasts is talking about the journey of what we do in sales, what we do in operations, what do we do in finance, what do we do in systems, what do we do in business, and how is the approach, and what's the methodology that comes out that's led to a level of success. And, you know, a lot of people want to know that. And a lot of people, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, without exception, everyone wants to know, well, tell me in 30 words how I can make this $100 million business. And you go, well, if you do it in 100 words, you probably would have already figured it out yourself. but it gives it a lot more depth, you know, like each of those peers into the business. And they're interrelated. And we talk about the interrelationship of those functional areas and how one benefits the others when you make a breakthrough. And the other guests provide a lot of insight in areas that aren't our strengths. And we've used them time and time again, and it's really, really helped.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, I've watched most of your shows, and I find it very, very well done and very interesting. And anybody that's watching this or listening, whichever the case may be, highly recommend the show. And so that's it, man. I just think it's been a great conversation, and I appreciate you coming on and sharing your vast wisdom in the world of being a business fixer, right? We'll give you a new title today.
It's a school of hard knocks. Usually say that, I'm not book smart. It's just, it all boils down. You get knocked down 10 times, make sure you get up 11.
Exactly.
Perfect. And that's life. So
that's life all the way around. Ian, thank you, my friend. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, and say hi to Wes for me as well, too.
We'll do it. All right. Cheers, brother. Thank you very much.
Bye.
All right. That was some good stuff right there. A lot of meat into that. So if you enjoyed that, make sure you follow their podcast. Make sure you follow Ian May and Ian Selby on LinkedIn and wherever else they're at. You're going to get a world of good stuff from those guys. Ian Selby's been a great friend for you. For a year and a half, 2 years now, and Ian May, who was just on, is becoming one, and you will enjoy and be benefited by knowing these two gentlemen. So that's it for today. Remember, you only get to go around once. It's easy for me to say, right? So live it, love it, own it. Love what you do and do what you love. And remember, make today your best day ever. until tomorrow. Cheers, my friends.
Thank you for listening to Building Wins Live.
You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.